White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer is apologizing again today after what he said yesterday during his press briefing, that what Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is doing in his country with chemical weapons is worse than what Adolf Hitler did in World War II. Let's listen.
You know, you had a, you know, someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
When a reporter gave him a chance to clarify that comment, given that Hitler did use chemical weapons to murder millions of Jews in concentration camps, Spicer said this.
I think when you come to sarin gas, there was no, he was not using the gas on his own people the same way that Assad is doing. I mean, there was clearly, I understand your point. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. There was not in the, he brought him into the, to the Holocaust Center. I understand that. But I'm saying in the way that Assad used them, where he went into towns, dropped them down to innocent into the middle of towns.
Sean Spicer has since apologized for those comments. And joining us now is NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. Hi, David.
Jeremy.
So, I mean, it's just unbelievable to listen to that clip. But he apologized last night on CNN. And then he also talked about his comments this morning at a speaking event in Washington. Let's listen.
I made a mistake. There's no other way. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I got into a topic that I shouldn't have, and I screwed up. It's a very holy week for both the Jewish people and the Christian people, and this is not to make a gaffe and a mistake like this is inexcusable and reprehensible. And so, of all weeks, this was not. This compounds that kind of mistake.
David, your thoughts on the comments and the apology?
Well, I'm not going to offer any apology for your playing the apology that ensued from his apology. Let me just say this was he himself has called it. I believe we just heard him say that it was inexcusable and reprehensible. Usually those are words that somebody else says just before they call for you to resign, right? The real problem in some ways, he mentioned at one point this was a gaffe. This was offensive. I'm Jewish. I don't think you have to be Jewish to be offended by what he had to say. And I think from the outpouring of criticism that you saw across the political spectrum and from folks online, you could see that that wasn't the case. You know, this was something in some ways when he said the word gaffe, a gaffe has been defined in Washington as revealing something you actually think. This administration has proven to be often – quite insensitive to Jews who have real reservations about some of the folks appointed to the administration and some of the messaging, some of the rhetoric that Mr. Trump used on the campaign trail or that was embraced by his campaign in his endeavor to win the White House. And to fumble this badly, to misspeak in such a clear way, to there are even incidental terms when he talked about you know, whether or not the Syrian dictator gassed his own people as though somehow German Jews were not Germans. You know, there were ways in which it seemed to trivialize and in almost dehumanize what Jewish people went through during the Holocaust and World War II. This is something that the note of contrition that Spicer struck, I must say, seemed genuine today. And that in and of itself is a rarity for this administration, which tells you something as well.
Well, what do you think about his job security at this point? Is he going to stay on? Can a press secretary stay on when they create such a problem themselves?
You know, this is something that, you know, often press secretaries have a shelf life of, call it a year and a half to 2 years in White Houses these days because they have to take so many arrows on behalf of the administration. They have to say so many things that involve so much spin or untruth that their credibility is compromised. You saw that a particularly glaring case with Scott McClellan, who ended up defending Bush administration officials who had, it appears, misrepresented themselves to him. But he had done so staking his own personal integrity on what he was saying in that scandal there. In this case, you know, Spicer, you know, we're only weeks into this administration, a couple months in. Spicer has said things that just aren't true and said them in the face of overwhelming, incontrovertible evidence to the contrary. And in so doing, he's represented the will of this administration. So the problem is not, you know, whether Sean Spicer is failing to be the best possible communicator for this administration. In some ways, the fear would be, the worst case scenario would be that he is the best person to do that, that there isn't somebody who could more credibly do so.
Well, and in fact,
this administration is estranged from the truth so much that it doesn't care to do so. This is a real chink. The offense that he's caused is a real moment for us to evaluate. Is he going to be able to function effectively? Credibility, I don't think he has a ton at this moment.
Well, and David, Sean Spicer wasn't even the only person to make the kind of comment that he made yesterday. Let's listen here to Defense Secretary James Mattis, who said something pretty similar.
Even in World War II, chemical weapons were not used on battlefields. Even in the Korean War, they were not used on battlefields. Since World War I, there's been an international convention on this.
I mean, it sounds when you hear that like this may have been a talking point for White House officials.
I think that's the case. I have seen some journalists, even some Jewish journalists, acknowledge that there is some kernel of truth there to this argument. Josh Marshall of Talking Points Memo, for example, a liberal news site. You know, there was this prohibition after the ravages and horrors of the First World War and mustard gas and things like that, this international ban on the use of it. And I think the talking point in best case scenario would be even, you know, the unmitigated horror of Hitler didn't do that thing that is specifically alleged in the case, even as he did things that were as bad by you know, astounding degrees.
Right.
But you know, that's a very tricky rhetorical case to pull off, and this administration isn't one that's proven anything like deft enough to do so.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens with Sean Spicer, but let's move on while we have you to another big story this week involving the media. United Airlines and their PR nightmare after the passenger was dragged off a plane earlier this week. Now, the plane was going to Louisville, Kentucky, and the Louisville newspaper, the Courier-Journal, published a story yesterday that dove into the criminal history of the passenger. Now, he's a doctor, but he was forced to surrender his medical license in 2005 after being convicted of drug-related charges. David, a lot of people found that pretty distasteful. Why go back into this man's history? It had nothing to do with what was going on here.
Look, I understand the impulse. You have a local paper in this case, the Courier-Journal owned by the Gannett, to flesh out a figure that's been thrust into what became a national and international viral story. Let's define who this guy is. We know this guy. There, we've got stories in the archives about this guy. Let's detail all that we can from the public record. The problem is they treated him like a rap sheet. Instead of a human being, instead of a doctor, instead of a guy with a family in their community, even if it lives some miles outside of Louisville, and instead of somebody who had his face, as we now have learned, essentially introduced into the armrest of an airplane seat by law enforcement officials. You know, you saw him on tape visibly bloodied in a way that had nothing to do with what he did a decade ago. And, you know, if you were to write a fuller story, a richer story that incorporates texture about who he is as a physician, who he is as an immigrant to this country, who he is as a family man, who he is in his community, you know, things positive and negative, then that's a fleshed out story about a human being. They treated him like a rap sheet, and I thought it was just a horrible error in judgment. Their editor-in-chief gave a statement out to the Columbia Journalism Review yesterday afternoon that I saw, in which they said, listen, he's not a new figure for our readers. So what may have seemed to an international readership that came to our website looking for more information about this story, that may have seemed fresh to them and totally out of context. We got it. I don't think that explanation holds, because if he's known to your readers because of these earlier items that landed him afoul of the law and of medical regulators in his state, then he should be easily more known to your readers as a full human being. And as you pointed out, and I think rightly from the outset, none of these things had any direct bearing on what those people knew when they dragged him off that plane. And therefore, if you're not given the full measure of the man, don't do it at all.
Okay. I have one more thing to ask you about, David, and we just have about 45 seconds left or so. But Bill O'Reilly announced last night that he is going to take a nearly two-week vacation with a planned return on April 24th. Curious timing with advertisers leaving his show in droves because of sexual harassment allegations. Some people saying this is the beginning of the end of O'Reilly. What do you think?
Even taking him at his word, this is a planned vacation that he tries to do most years around his kids' vacation break. It's an incredibly precarious moment for Bill O'Reilly. He makes so much money for that network, and he sets the table for their incredibly successful primetime broadcast every weeknight. And yet advertisers are fleeing. They're not losing all that revenue. They're capturing most of it on other shows, but they're fleeing. It's a huge black eye. It's sustaining. They're desperately hoping it blows over. But I got to tell you, the younger Murdoch sons running the company with their father – if they need to, they'll use this as a pretext to knock the guy out.
NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik with a lot of media news today. David, thanks so much.
You bet.